fifth case, the United States versus Anderson et al.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Assistant Judith Kennecke, appearing today for Assistant Melissa Day, who represents the three defendants named in this consolidated brief. At issue in this case is whether or not the district court erred when it refused to recognize that it had any discretion within the parameters of HEAD to impose a sentence of halfway house placement as part of a sentence of supervision. The cases at bar are distinguishable from the case in HEAD, and I think that the factual distinctions are particularly important. In the HEAD case, the court sentenced Mr. HEAD to the two-year statutory maximum and then imposed an additional year of supervised release with 6 months in a halfway house setting. The defendants, each of the three defendants in the case at bar, have a statutory maximum possible sentence of 5 years. In each of the cases, three cases in the case at bar, each of the defendants have came to the court upon revocation requesting placement in the halfway house setting in lieu of a lengthier sentence, which unfortunately is exactly what the trial court or the district court ended up imposing.
But you know, in HEAD, it's really a statutory interpretation decision. It looks at the language of the statute. It acknowledges, actually, that maybe this was a glitch, but courts are not in the business of rewriting statutes. Of course, it gets fixed eventually, but there's this group of people in between who fall in the category of people for whom halfway house is not one of those conditions of supervised release that's authorized. And so I'm not sure that, although you can often find differences among cases, I'm not sure there are differences that we're allowed to take into account here. It seems like the district court followed HEAD, and he did the best he could to suggest to BOP that they recommend halfway house for the last 6 months. But the statute's the statute.
Well, I think that that type of approach is problematic on several fronts, Your Honor. First of all, what occurs from that type of reading of HEAD serves to take a whole section of criminal defendants and put them at a disadvantage and creates under 3553A, another statute that must be considered, a great sentencing disparity. So we're basically...
But if it's congressionally driven... Isn't that Congress's... You know, in other words, if Congress has drawn the line, Congress changes its mind from time to time about whether halfway houses are a good option for supervised release. Isn't Congress entitled to do that?
Yes, Your Honor, they are. But I think in cases such as the cases that are before the court today, where criminal defendants are coming and requesting halfway house placement, and the law has been revised now to include that beneficial component of supervised release, that the options that were presented to the court were not only lawful but fell within the parameters of HEAD. For instance, allowing them to be sentenced pursuant to the revised statute with a waiver of any ex post facto issues.
Now, the government argues that although that might have been theoretically possible, it doesn't really ever happen here, that there are no clear waivers of ex post facto defenses.
Well, and I disagree with the government on that point, Your Honor. The procedural status of these three cases was somewhat murky. The first case that went before the court was the case of Ronald Mosseri. It had been continued from a February setting to a March setting. The district court had instructed the parties to see if there was any viable option in light of HEAD that would allow him to impose halfway house as part of supervised release. That is what the parties did. There was a thorough discussion of this issue in the first revocation hearing of Ronald Mosseri. And in that discussion, two options were presented to the court. One was that the actual revocation hearing could be continued, the defendants could be bonded to halfway house, and then come back for final disposition of the case. the alternative was that the court could allow a waiver of any ex post facto issues and at the request of the defendants place them in halfway house as part of their supervision. I disagree with the government because the transcripts of the two subsequent hearings, it is very clear that defense counsel is requesting that the court, in consideration of the previous discussion in Head, allow the halfway house placement. The only argument for halfway house placement was with the waiver of the ex post facto issue. It certainly would have been a clearer record if we'd have gone through all the steps, if the government, the defense, and the judge had done so. But I believe it's very clear that the previous discussion of Head and the options put forth to the court was what the each defendant was requesting.
Mm-hmm. I also so isn't this a terrible case of be careful what you wish for? Wasn't it your office that was arguing
in
Head?
Your Honor. Yes. And unfortunately, because all our clients are individuals, we argue for what is best for each individual client. But then again, when we have clients of this nature who now are not able to avail themselves of the benefit, we have to appeal to the court to impose what is a reasonable sentence and to consider the alternatives within the parameters of the law. Additionally, Your Honor, we did a supplemental filing last week in this case in review of the overall case law in this court. We came upon a case of In Re Thiel out of the District of Columbia, which we believe is pertinent and significant to the issue in the case at bar. In that case, the court is discussing Title 3582A, which basically says that promoting correctional or rehabilitation is an inappropriate consideration for sentencing or in the length of a sentence. There is a circuit split, and this honorable court has not decided one way or the other address that issue, but we would ask that the court consider it because it seems very clear from the statutes that rehabilitation cannot be used to increase the length of a defendant's sentence. It does work to their detriment. That is clearly what happened in the case. Each defendant received an additional 6 months with the hope, the mere hope that BOP will put them in the halfway house to give them the benefits they need. So we do offer that to the court and ask for the court's consideration of that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Leggins.
Thank you, Your Honors. Tom Leggins on behalf of the United States. At the outset, I would like to agree with Judge Wood that the defendant's attempt to distinguish Head is really unavailing because it was decided on the basis of a statutory interpretation and not on any calculation of how much time the defendant had left to serve. With that said, the problem in this case, of course, arises because for 12 years, when you read 3583 in conjunction with 3563, a halfway house placement was not a possible condition of supervised release, and this court decided in the Head decision that if a court does in fact impose that condition, then it has imposed an illegal sentence, not just a sentence in error, but a sentence that the court was not authorized to impose. I think that has enormous consequences for the defendant's waiver argument. It is our position that you cannot waive yourself into an illegal sentence. This court stated in United States versus Gibson, which was a case where the defendant had a statutory 5-year cap on his on the count he pled to, who was subsequently agreed to be sentenced to 262 months in prison. And this court reversed that guilty plea, finding that it was an illegal sentence. It was one that was not authorized by law, and it was one that the district court should not have imposed. I think what the defendant is asking the district court to do in this case is the same thing.
It's possible, of course, we were wrong in Head. You know, we were not in the mainstream of courts of appeals. People had been, seemed to me, kind of turning themselves into pretzels trying to get around that language of those two statutes. But nonetheless, there were arguments, and as I recall, the government made arguments in Head that
yes.
Would have allowed the halfway house in those circumstances. So should we just revisit Head and get rid of this anomaly for this period of time?
You know, the government doesn't really have a dog in that fight. You're right. We did. We did argue for the exact opposite result as this in Head. So there's anomalies all around with this issue. And whether or not, I mean, personally, I believe all three of these defendants would have benefited from being able to go into a halfway house. But I'm here to support the law as it exists now, and also in fairness to the district court, because you know, I'm not going to concede the issue when the district court had a clear directive from this court what he was supposed to do.
Well, that's why Gibson would apply, isn't it? I mean, if it's an illegal sentence, it's an illegal sentence.
That's right, and he can't do it. And as it stands now, with this court's interpretation of Head, it would have been, in our view, an illegal sentence.
Gibson came from the Southern District of Illinois.
It sure did. And what would be even worse if with that, Gibson was inadvertent. And here you would have the government, the defense and the court basically conspiring to get around thus far as a valid and standing ruling of this court. And even if this were a waivable issue, there's nothing in the record to indicate a waiver in this case. You can't just raise the issue and say that that's a waiver of a constitutional right. In order to waive a constitutional right, it has to be unequivocal, it has to be knowing, it has to be voluntary, and there has to be a record of it.
But you would agree, would you not, that the district court didn't go down that path because it was the district court's understanding that it just wasn't available. If we were to think for some reason that it was legally open, wouldn't it be fair to send it back and say, you know, we've kind of lifted the restriction on you, you're now allowed to think about it?
Yes, I think you could do that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that, if that's what you decided to do. But what I'm saying is the defendant cannot stand before this court and say the court should have accepted our waiver.
Sure.
When they didn't make one.
It just got cut off at the pass, I think, because of everyone's understanding of the legal situation, which, well, may have been correct. I mean, that may be exactly the way Head should be read.
Well, I think you are correct. I think the judge, there is no need to get to the issue of waiver, mm-hmm. given the posture of the case. With regard, I would like to touch briefly on the case that counsel filed at the end of last week in Ray Seal case out of the D.C. Circuit. At the outset, I would note that I believe this issue has to be analyzed in a plain air analysis. This analysis was never presented to the district court. And from a plain air analysis, of course, even if you concede error, one of the things, the next thing you have to show it is that it's plain. And there's a 4-4 circuit split on this issue. And it would be our position that if there's that much unease about this issue, or if there's that much discord, then by definition the error is not going to be plain. I mean, the court could have came down either way. How can the error be plain? With regard to the I would also note that another component of the plain air analysis is an analysis of whether it undermines the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of the judicial system. And all the court was doing here in imposing the sentence it did, he was trying to give the defendants what they were asking for in a legal way, or give them the best chance of getting what they were asking for in a way that wasn't illegal under this court's precedent. And finally, I would also point out that there is a spirited and well-reasoned dissent in the N. Ray Seal case, and we would adopt the arguments therein. And if there are no further questions, I'll yield my time.
Thank you, Mr. Liggins.
I would just take a few minutes just to clarify a couple of issues, Your Honors. One is that we were not trying to get the judge to impose an illegal sentence. We were trying to get the judge, offer him options to work within the parameters of the head decision. And I believe that both of the options that were presented to the court were within the parameters of the head decision. Allowing the defendants to proceed under the revised statute, which was beneficial and not detrimental to them, with the safeguard of a waiver of any ex post facto issues, would have allowed the defendants to have the benefit of that revised statute instead of receiving the detrimental effect of the head decision. Every decision that is handed down by any court works to the detriment of some and the benefit of others. It is our job as defenders to present arguments to this honorable court and to the district court to provide options that can best effectuate a reasonable sentence for each defendant. In the case at bar, none of these sentences were reasonable. Each defendant is serving a six-month additional sentence with the possibility, which may or may not be likely, that they will receive the halfway house assistance that the court and the parties acknowledged was needed. What we have here are unreasonable sentences. These clients are doing much more lengthy sentences than other defendants in the same situations. And for that reason, the 3553A has been violated. And we believe that the district court simply did not know it had discretion to work within the parameters of HEAD. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.